And we are back with episode 314 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and let's see, Luther family, Osborne family, Merlin family. Guys, I really think you should have pulled the blinds.
And this is Bronston from Australia, and it's tough to find a free payphone these days.
All I can say is that I'm hoping that all of this stuff going on in New York City means that seeing a lot more of Sarah Shahi and Amy Acker in the future, because I definitely would like to. We are going to be talking about Person of Interest, Arrow, and Supernatural. Let me warn you right now, these are going to be some high-scoring episodes, without a doubt. But first, before we get into any of that, Edmund, if you could please.
We will absolutely discuss all aspects of these episodes, so you will be horribly spoiled. If you've already watched them, you're horribly spoiled already.
That's one way of looking at it, I guess. Let's go ahead then and start right away with the promo to Person of Interest. Here you go.
Something is wrong with the machine.
What's happening to you?
That virus is putting countless lives at risk.
Now, their last hope.
You got some kind of plan to get me out of here?
John, this is the plan.
Is their worst enemy.
What do you know?
You show me yours and I'll show you mine.
A new Person of Interest.
Oh, Amy, say that like you mean it. Okay, this is the middle episode, I guess, of the final three episodes for Person of Interest's second season. Episode 21, Zero Day. The machine is affected by a virus that causes it to put out erratic numbers. Meanwhile, the team looks for an elusive tech millionaire, and Detective Carter works to bring down Cal Beecher's killer, but her mission has unintended consequences. Yeah, like I was saying, it strikes me very much as the middle chapter of this ending trilogy of episodes. And, we started off with last episode, the virus finally having its big effect on the machine, and now we're seeing how all of that is parsing out, and just who it is that is getting involved in the stakes that the machine is and its function brings to the table. If I'm kind of stumbling over my words, I'm still reeling from this episode, as you can probably guess. Edmund, why don't you go ahead and jump in? You wrote a review for this, so.
Sure. Yeah. No. I mean, this was an amazing roller coaster of an episode. I mean, this was from the previews, we knew Shaw and Root were going to be involved, and that was certainly a nice thing to see, given the way they've been setting the two of them up as adversaries. And but then it was, as the episode's opening and, the guest list is coming up, and, it was like basically my jaw was dropping at seeing, that basically, yes, everybody is involved. And, so, I mean, this is a huge ramp up from, from that lead in where it was, sort of more, focusing on Fusco and, and the machine, and having a number that they couldn't save, and, kind of almost more introspective, and then just going, pedal to the metal with this one, where we're certainly in terms of the consequences, we've got Reese just having to sit in a car with a police scanner because he's not getting any numbers, and, he really needs his fix of trying to save somebody, so he's dashing around chasing after, chasing after things after the fact. You've got Carter, very frustrated that, yes, all of a sudden it's, that they're not getting any warning. We have the Russian gangs ramping things up, and apparently, and they're even worse than Elias, because, Elias does have a certain, sense of order and decorum to him, and the Russians are just, plain crazy out there. Meanwhile, of course, the numbers aren't getting through to Washington either, which, a big problem for the special counsel, but he doesn't realize quite how bad his problems are about to get, as Root finally reveals herself and, basically demands that tell her what she needs to know. And we all know she's very good at getting people to tell her what she needs to know, one way or another. So we have that whole storyline just completely ramping up, and then at the same time, flashing back to Nathan and the continuing story of him, when he was initially trying to do something about the numbers, and how all of that played out between him and Finch. It's where I kind of pause, because it's, okay, which which avenue to go down first. I mean, I guess it's more of the, it's in the ongoing issue with this, you know, with the machine is, you know, okay, we've seen it, you know, get fixated on Finch as its daddy or admin. He's, you know, seems to protect, you know, is protecting him, and we're, you know, and how much of an actual artificial intelligence is it? And in this episode, we have the machine finally actually create a number out of whole cloth, you know, basically, you know, and so, you know, they finally, you know, the machine finally managed to get this number through to them, and it just operates beautifully on so many levels. I mean, there was the calling the number Thornhill, which is Cary Grant's character in North by Northwest, and the fact that Cary Grant is mistaken for just such a straw man, a person who is there but isn't there, and basically they're running around trying to find this guy, which is what finally brings them into contact with Shaw, because of course she happens to be doing the same thing, and yes, does once again get the drop on Reese, and manages to let him get captured while she slips away. Having this whole wonderfully intricate plot around this false person, just the fact that the machine has now actually created something. So, you know, yes, guess what? It's getting closer and closer to being a person, and maybe even closer and closer to being a god. You know, yes, I mean, you know, we'd be kind of hoping they'd finally have their big confrontation, but no, it's basically that Shaw is teaming up with Reese to become the badass dream team that we've been hoping for, and meanwhile Root has once again taken Harold hostage and is leading him around and threatening Grace and being as nasty and scary as she's been all along, and it's just interlocking movement through the city, all eventually coming back to, you know, yes, that it's machine's been communicating by payphone all along, and it's all coming down to it's rebooting itself, and it's going to call just one particular payphone, and leading us up to that confrontation in the New York Public Library, because as we've already seen from the flashbacks, you know, Finch just has this thing about libraries, you know, as we've seen all along, and you know, and we also, thanks to those flashbacks, know why he has a particular attachment to that library where they set up their base, because after all of this back and forth of Nathan being the one with the conscience, the one who wanted the back door in there, and Finch being the one, you know, being very, very scared of that and scared of how it would affect the machine and whether it would, you know, would be a security hole that somebody could exploit, you know, in fact was the one who shut it down just as Nathan's number came up. It just operated so well on so many levels, of just taking all of these themes and characters and, you know, backstory that they've been setting up over these past two seasons and just bringing them completely to a head, and up to that, for that final moment when the machine is calling through and Harold manages to do something so that two phones ring and Root and Reese are picking it up, and we're just left wondering who got what call and who's in control of what as they fade to black. And it was one of these episodes where this could have been the season finale, you know, and then just leave us hanging till next season to see how that all turns out. But I love the fact that this was just the middle part, and you know, then we get to come back and see, you know, the following week to find out exactly where all that went. But this just really felt like the culmination of what they've been doing for two seasons, and it was just hugely entertaining, as well as managing to juggle all of these elements and just keep you enthralled, and you're able to still follow everything and just be on tenterhooks throughout, wondering which way it's going to go.
Mm. Bronson, how about you? What are your thoughts on this one?
I'm not sure how much I can add, except to say that I agree with so much of what you're saying. This really, really could have been the season finale. It had that much that much movement, that much excitement, that much of all the characters and story threads coming together, and learning so much about the machine in particular. It's that's really been the strongest sort of story thread of season two. In my opinion, is just getting to understand the machine in so much more detail. And I mean, you were talking about how, you know, what we're learning this episode is like, you know, it's one step closer to being alive. And it to me, was more like, no, it's more like, we're seeing how much it's been stripped back in a sense, that everything that it's doing, everything it's been capable of up to this point, everything we've gotten to know about it is as a result of what it's had to learn how to do with some severe limitations placed on it by Finch. His very determined attempts to sort of keep it a functioning machine rather than a living entity that happens to be digital, you know, machinery and digital stuff. It's just really, it was really, really engaging. And in that moment where we found out about the thing deleting its memories, we were kind of on root side for just a tick. Then of course we realized, oh my goodness, we're on root side. What the hell is this show doing to me? And yeah, just unraveling the whole plot of Decima, and you know, getting to have Shaw back and getting Greer in there and stuff with Carter. It's the only thing I could possibly be disappointed about is that we didn't get any Fusco. I think that was more a decision. Yeah, we got a lot of that in the previous one, which I think was a very conscious decision, because Fusco is what he's got to contribute to. This particular aspect of the storyline, there's really not much he can contribute to, and I'm surprised that Carter has been able to contribute as much as she had. She had a very sort of self-enclosed storyline about dealing with dealing with HR and all that, and yeah, this was a blast from top to tail, and just left me just gagging for the next episode.
Definitely. Edmund, you gave this one a 10 out of 10.
Yep.
Bronson, what would you give it?
Ooh. I'm so tempted to give it the yeah, I think I'll give it the 10 as well. Like, if I had to stack this episode up against the Hannibal episode that we talked about previously, I think that one would the Hannibal episode would just edge out, but this one was still just such a perfect culmination of so many things
I can't argue. I mean, I try to find little things, but there's really nothing but little nitpicks that I could give it, if that. And there were so many things that I was so looking forward to coming together and did in this episode, and it was not even the finale, it was the penultimate episode. So this was the logical follow-up to Relevance earlier this season, where Shaw was introduced, and certainly that was a 10 out of 10 episode for us, and this one is logically, again, another 10 out of 10. So, wow, starting right at the top this time around, and we are going to move on to Arrow and see how it can stack up against that. Probably not going to hit a 10 out of 10, but let's see how well we do. And here is the promo.
My mom and my best friend's dad are involved in a conspiracy that may have dire consequences.
We won't fail this city.
He's tying up loose ends.
Someone doesn't want anyone to know about it.
What are you doing here?
Helping your father with an investigation.
I need you to stop.
I need to know.
I'm finally seeing you for who you really are.
Arrow.
All right, and let's see. That would be Arrow, Season 1, Episode 22, Darkness on the Edge of Town. With the Undertaking only days away, Malcolm dons his black hood to conclude business with the seismologist Dr. Brian Markov and his team. Meanwhile, Oliver recalls trying to prevent fires from shooting down a Ferris airjet while on the island. You gotta love the little connection there to DC mythology with Ferris Air.
Yeah, I did notice that.
Yeah. But wow, okay, so this is obviously setting things up for the finale in a big way. And yeah, I would say that this maybe had a few people a little annoyed with everything coming together so much, with Oliver and the Dark Archer coming back in a huge way right at the beginning of the episode, and you had this great little mission with Felicity yet again, and had a little bit of a Mission Impossible thing going on in Merlin's building, and just the interplay there was great, where no matter what Oliver did, it seemed like there was something between him and helping Felicity, including Merlin coming along at one point. It was all working so well that people were very irritated when there was still this huge amount of time spent on the love triangle. And so I think a lot of people were willing to knock this down a few pegs just because of that. My personal opinion is that this, once again, is an example of where the love triangle is very reflective of Oliver's mindset, and it's telling us a lot about the shortcomings of his understanding of just where things are going here, and his limited understanding of it. Just the fact that he can even begin to imagine that he's coming to the end of his journey is flawed to the extreme. So for him to then think to himself, hey, you know, I actually see an end for all this vigilante stuff, so I can really be with Laurel if I want to, and I can do all of that. He has no idea what he's bringing down on himself and everyone around him. Never mind the fact that at the end of this episode, of course, we get the huge turn of events where, yes, not only does Oliver know what Malcolm has to do with all of this stuff now, but now Malcolm knows who Oliver is. And I'm extremely intrigued by Malcolm's little, oh no, because that seemed like a completely unexpected reaction.
Yes.
Why did he say that? It's like either if it were a mere complication, it would have been like, you know, offhand, but he looked like he was deeply affected by that. Like it was really going to mess up his plans or in some other way, affect them in a huge way. So all of that was really working for me. And I think that if there's one weakness to this episode, it's the fact that the whole thing with Tommy and his father is so familiar because of the retread of that whole, what everybody always goes to, the Harry and Norman Osborn thing, because we've seen it twice in 10 years with Spider-Man. So everyone already knows how this works. So for it to kind of replay here does seem awfully familiar, and I can understand why some people really didn't like that much in conjunction with the love triangle stuff, but I really didn't feel like it took that much away. I just felt like it was still drawing out some stuff that I was hoping that they were going to address by the end of the season. Edmund, how about you? What are your thoughts on this one?
I mean, I guess my issue more with, I mean, I didn't necessarily mind them dealing with the love triangle stuff. What I just found kind of surprising, and yes, I mean, I do take your point in terms of it showing, you know, sort of, you know, lack of judgment or, you know, lack of, you know, foresight on Oliver's part was, you know, that I, you know, especially the way they were sort of hitting it so hard about, you know, she chose you and, you know, and, all of our baggage, et cetera, was, I mean, what got to me was them, you know, going to Oliver and Laurel, you know, basically consummating things rather than, you know, I felt it could have been left and, you know, for something to continue pushing next season, you know, and for now leave it with, you know, Malcolm as the Dark Archer, Tommy as, you know, yeah, the sort of, you know, protege who doesn't quite realize what he's getting into yet. You know, so that was my main issue with it, was that it just felt too fast, you know, even though I can see that other point, but certainly, yeah, I mean, as far as the, you know, the actual action going on, I mean, the whole infiltration of the building, you know, which, yeah, at certain, you know, Mission Impossible, you know, ties to it, or if somebody needs a more recent reference, also, you know, was a little leveragey too, you know, and certainly, you know, and, you know, and with the nice comic bits, I mean, both, you know, the, you know, Felicity saying, you know, so I just mean that in a completely platonic way, and you know, and you know, and then her lovely improv when Diggle rescues her, you know, oh no, I love him, I really need him.
And the fact that they just burst into laughter as soon as they're out of shot was like that's a nice touch. You don't see that too often.
I especially going into the finale and the whole thing, you know, like, you know, no, they've got to try and, you know, stop this machine. It really was quite, you know, I thought quite shocking to have Malcolm take him down and reveal him, you know, certainly, going into this last episode, you know. Yeah, and I know you commented on it over on the website, but yeah, that moment when Oliver fires at him and he catches the arrow, and it was like, oh dear, okay, this is not going to go well. Then, I mean, on the other side, I mean, yeah, I mean, it was actually, you know, kind of. Again, kind of like with Person of Interest, where, you know, no, we've got this penultimate episode where there's, you know, lots of major stuff going on. I mean, with the island stuff, you know, having Yao Fei, you know, acquiesce to the demands, and then, you know, once he's served his purpose, you know, getting taken out like that was a bit of a shock as well. Although, of course, it's a bit of an amateur move on
Fei's part. I mean, you always get at least a couple of good takes. I mean, that's one-on-one. Mm-hmm. But, you know, making ransom demands.
Yeah. You know, even though it's quite obvious that, you know, no, I mean, you know, he's got more than enough of a training squad there now to complete the rest of his education. But yeah, I mean, so, you know, that, you know, I thought it was a good setup for a finale, you know, with, I mean, kind of, again, you know, with stuff going on where, you know, yeah, this could have been the finale. And, you know, except we have that big crate running around that we still have to deal with.
Mm. Definitely. Now, Bronslem, how about you? Further thoughts on this one?
I'm not sure how much I can really add that you guys haven't covered. It was a lot like the Person of Interest episode we just talked about. It's the penultimate episode of the season. You've got a lot of plot movement. You've got a lot of reveals. You've got some fun, you know, the fun sequences like that infiltration thing. You had a lot of confrontations, a lot of dynamics and things like that coming to a head. It's really about, say, you know, paving the road for a big finale, but it did so in just a really thoroughly entertaining way.
Mm. I gave this one an 8 out of 10. How about you, Bronston? What would you give it?
Ooh. I think I'd go as high as a 9. I look at the episode, I have a tough time picking out things that I... picking out anything that I wasn't really on board with. I had a great time with this episode. I was really engaged the whole way through, and I'm really keen for what comes next.
And how about you, Edmund? What would you give it?
I think I'm with you on an 8. It was really well done, but you know, even though I may not have been as, you know, found it as problematic as some, I mean, there was still just the way the Oliver Laurel Tommy thing turned just knocked it down a bit for me.
Yeah, it still winds up being in among the top 5 episodes of the season as far as our scores are concerned. So certainly kicking things up a notch and leading directly into what should be a pretty big finale. All right, well, we are going to move on then to Supernatural, and here's the promo.
I'm killing everyone you've ever served.
Dad, they're all dead!
He was possessed by a demon.
Morning, sunshine.
It works. Well, that was weird.
Supernatural, all new, next Wednesday, 9/8 Central on the CW.
If there's anything more terrifying than hearing or seeing the words clip show,
yes.
I don't know what is, but thankfully that's not what this was. Let's do this the right way. Supernatural Season 8, Episode 22, Clip Show. Sam and Dean reunite with Castiel, yay, and discover a film in the Men of Letters files that could be the key to the third trial. Meanwhile, Crowley digs into Sam and Dean's past, and that's meant somewhat literally. Think about it. All right, wow. So, yes, we're all glad that this was not, in fact, an actual clip show. We're also glad that the film that they were watching all together and the Men of Letters thing was not Sam and Dean finally just getting around to explaining porn to Castiel.
Yes.
If the pizza man loves the babysitter, as he claims, why does he keep slapping her rear?
Yes, exactly.
Sorry, I'm trying. Castiel, it's not there yet.
Not quite there, but that's all right. We all get the point. No one can quite speak gravelly like Misha Collins. Wow, yeah, I loved this episode for many reasons. Being, of course, an original fan from the very start, I I love the fact that for the last couple seasons, they've been doing a great job of kind of calling back to the first seasons. But this was an even more direct version of that, where Crowley basically apparently got his hands on the first season DVDs and has decided to wipe out the survivors of, in relative sequence, of the first few adventures that the Winchesters had. And it's nice to know that the Winchesters actually remember who these people are when all is said and done. This is all basically to get them to stop trying to go through with the whole third trial, which involves curing a demon. And as most of us had guessed, curing a demon means, basically curing the demon of its hellish influence so that it no longer is really a demon anymore. It's a more or less restored human soul for all intent purposes. What I love is that they took the Men of Letters stuff and made that part of this story a lot more, because before they seemed very separate, but here we have the key to the third trial, as it said in the PR release, that was something that came right out of information that was in the vault in the Wind Cave. So that information now brings the two together, not to mention the fact that Abaddon came back. It's good to see people from Stargate Universe getting work. But yeah, so she's back, and it certainly looks as though that's going to cause some complications, because as we see here, let me put it this way. If they get this far with it and they don't pull off the third trial to at least a temporary sense, it's going to be a little annoying.
Yeah.
Because they've been kind of teasing it for a while. And a lot has been pushing towards this idea that the vast majority of demons and hell itself is going to be kind of cut off. And then we have what was one of the things I've been kind of waiting for them to do. And I know that, we talked about this a long while back. It was one of my first predictions after the Men of Letters episode took place, was that, okay, now that we have an angel tablet as well, are we going to seal off both the gates to hell and to heaven and kind of in one fell swoop remove both of those as an intervening problem for the human race? And everything that Metatron said in the previous episode and says in this episode tells me, yeah, that's kind of where they may be going. So, yeah, I was kind of jazzed by the fact that we kind of called this a while ago and that they may actually be going in exactly the direction that we thought, which just makes me then wonder, how are they going to completely subvert that in the finale? But I just loved it. I thought it was a great episode. Bronstum, how about you take it next? What were your thoughts on it?
Yes, once I recovered from the apprehension at the title,
yes,
and sort of realized that it was, not going to be an actual clip show, yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it, with 3 exclamation points. It, got to bring back a lot of previous characters, not just, not just the people from previous seasons that they'd saved, but we brought back, totally blanking on her name, the Hell Knight, who's... Damn it.
Abaddon.
Complete brain fart. Yes, Abaddon. Okay. Abaddon, yes. But Abaddon, Crowley got to come back and be snarky and stuff and just... obviously Castiel's around a bit more, so that's always fun. Setting up this kind of dual storyline of trying to shut off both gates of hell, the gates of hell and the gates of heaven. Yeah, a lot like the last two things we talked about. This is all about pushing towards the conclusion, but in probably the best way possible. It's just full of all the things. This episode's full of all the things, I love about Supernatural. It's just, it puts the characters through the ringer, but it's still, fun and funny. It's cool in how all the lore is used and the mythology is played with for the sake of new story. And just the sense of, just that sense of hopeless dread that we're left with at the end of the episode, particularly on the Sam and Dean storyline, is they're left with, okay, well, we can either have all these people we say, we can have all the work we've done in the last 8 years completely invalidated, or we can just sort of let the demons run amok. It's, it left me with an emotional reaction to everything that was going on. I felt like I was with Sam and Dean. I felt like I was just sort of being crushed by how terrible the situation has become, and like the amount of stuff that they've got to get, you know, all the stuff they've got to wade through to make things better. And I like love it when a TV show can, when an episode can do that to me, can just sort of give me that kind of reaction.
Yeah, definitely. Edmund, how about you? I mean, you came in a couple seasons ago, so I'm kind of curious how this one hit you.
Trend of, I guess, over the last couple of seasons of, I mean, those particular writers who, you know, keep bringing in people who are supposedly from their past who aren't really from the past of the show. And, of course, I wouldn't know those things and always assume we'd go into the reviews and you'd tell me and then find out, oh, no, we've never seen them before. And this episode kind of pointed up, you know, how badly that was done, because even not knowing the past stories, you know, this definitely had much more resonance. I mean, it certainly helps when you can actually have real clips back to the previous appearances, you know, where they do look 7 years younger with different hair and all that stuff. Was certainly, you know, ramping things up. I mean, it's kind of the theme of this show of, you know, yeah, I mean, all these setups into finales. And I did like, actually, the way with the Castiel Metatron, where it did feel a little up in the air of, you know, what was Metatron actually doing? You know, was this really a trial? Was this, you know, was he just trying to see how far he could push Castiel? When I lived out in California, I spent quite a bit of time in Ojai, which is where that restaurant was. And so it rather amused me, since Ojai is a bit of a spiritual center. It's where Krishnamurti had his headquarters. And, you know, it's one of the few valleys that go east-west. So it kind of has this whole mystic air about it. So the fact that, you know, the offspring of a human and an angel would wind up there, actually, you know, actually made a bit of sense. And I thought it was a nice little Easter.
Can I just make a quick interjection? They talked about the child of an angel and stuff like that. What angel has been hanging around on Earth for quite a long while?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, that's it. Just sort of put that thought in your head.
Yeah, yeah.
Back to it.
Although he didn't seem to recognize him, but even then, I mean, obviously they don't have much time left in this season, but you know, that it looked like they were going to play around with that, but then certainly given her reaction and the way she attacked them, it was, you know, it was definitely sort of a quick turnaround to make it okay for Castiel to gank her in the end. They only have the one more episodes, you know, whether, you know, it does feel a little bit odd if after the Winchester's three trials have taken so long, if, you know, even though they are two angels, if they do this too quickly. But other than that, I mean, there is, you know, I love the Crowley's caller ID is 666. And the one thing that just really kind of stuck in my craw was, how the heck do they leave her sitting in that chair, supposedly restrained, but come on, man, go out to take that call and just, you know, and just stay away long enough for, you know, her hand to pull, what was the hand in Adam's family, cousin It, to emerge and set her free. But anyway, other than that, that was, you know, I really enjoyed the episode, but that was the one part that just seemed a little bit too much of a plot convenience, because, yeah, she's a major character. We need to have her around to run loose in the finale. Anyway.
Yeah, I can't even begin to guess what terribleness is going to have going on here. But anyway, this is, again, like Bronstam, you said, we've got three penultimate episodes that we're covering here, and all of them just ramped things up in a major way. I mean, we can say that, you know, Arrow, being its first season, it has the least that it needs to prove, I guess you could say, in a certain sense, because coming out strong at the end of a season is probably going to be fairly easy, since they had to kind of find their feet and did so pretty quickly, and there's no real big expectations at this point other than just going out on a high note. Person of Interest went out really strong in the first season, and it's very impressive to see where they are right now in, you know, relative to the first season. I mean, it's really neat to see that they've managed to deliver a second season that's just continuing that excellence. But Supernatural is oddly coming from a really inconsistent season. What's really strange to me is that, you know, the last few episodes have certainly been very good, but the season as a whole has been up and down all over the place. It's actually trending below the last two seasons before it, which really surprises me when you look back on it. But it's amazing to think then that a season that's been that inconsistent and has been delivering kind of lower than we would have expected is really ending a lot stronger than either of the two previous seasons did.
Yeah.
I don't remember, you know, them hitting eights and nines consistently for the last few episodes. Now, the last two episodes, Pac-Man Fever, which of course had Charlie in it, and then The Great Escapist, which really kind of started off this all rather familiar at this point, three-episode finale arc. Mm-hmm. Both of those episodes had a score of 9. And for me, this one, again, was a 9. It was really, really good. It was very strong. There were a couple little things here and there that I was a little bit annoyed that if this really is the whole three trials to close the gates of hell thing, that they're waiting until now to pull that trigger. But okay, granted, Castiel was only a you know recurring character this season. He wasn't a regular, so I kind of understand where that they had to work with what they had. But certainly, this was about as high as it gets without hitting that next level for me. How about you, Edmund? What would you give it?
Yeah, I think Abaddon Escape aside, I mean, that's probably the only demerit. So, yeah, I'm good with the 9 as well.
And Bronstum, how about you?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the consensus. This was a very, very strong 9.
Yeah. And that's 3 in a row. So here we go. We're left to wonder, is the finale going to be able to close this out just as strong as these episodes that we're leading in? And, yeah, I mean, we remember last season, it seemed like they were kind of going to, you know, hit their stride at the end, and then boom, the finale hit, and it was possibly the worst episode of the season. So I'm really hoping that Jeremy Carver will turn this one around as far as the trend that we see at the end of the season. And yeah, I mean, I keep on mentioning that this kind of started off very inconsistently. I mean, I think right now it's hard to think back to the beginning of the season when we were struggling with Sam and his relationship woes with, I don't even remember her name now.
Amelia,
yeah, there you go. And all of that was going on, and it wasn't really until we got to the Men of Letters episode. That was when it finally took that turn, and that was a little bit after the middle of the season. So certainly I think that's when they finally kind of got their mojo back, furry episode aside. But I'm hoping that we will see them pull it out so that they'll at least match the last couple seasons versus having to hope that next season they will be starting off where they're leaving off this season at. But at any rate, any other last thoughts on Supernatural?
Yeah, no, I mean, I do think this season, I mean, had to sort of deal with the hangover from the Leviathans and the whole purgatory decision. So, you know, yeah, let's hope that this is them, you know, getting that stuff out of the way and getting back on track.
Absolutely. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there is also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for this show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Myth's use of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...